from the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, trusting everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run.
Welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Every week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about the folks who are killing the planet and the folks who have detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, and web addresses, so please go get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information. Because this isn't couch potato radio, it's activist radio. And I urge you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down at the road blockade. And if you have information, announcements, or comments for Earth First Radio, please keep your pencil handy and listen for the contact information later on in the show. As always, we start off with announcements. First is some tour dates for Casey Neal. In December 10th, he'll be in Amherst, Massachusetts at Amherst College. That's a tentative date. December 11th in Oxford, New York at the Night Eagle. And December 12th at Rochester, New York at the 12 Corners Coffee House. Then back to Portland, Oregon on December 17th at Laurel Thirst, 29th and Glycian with the Dolomites. Ripping Celtic rock a la early Pogues. And that's it for Casey Neal. He'll have no shows until February, so take care. Coming up in Oakland on December 10th, a noon rally and press conference at the Oakland City Hall, 14th and Broadway, followed by a 1 p.m. march to the federal courthouse, where at 1:30 there'll be the court hearing at the federal courthouse. And this is the Daryl Cherney, Judy Berry Earth First civil rights suit against the FBI and the Oakland Police Department. We'll be back in Oakland, in the Oakland U.S. District Courthouse. The noon press conference and rally will introduce the Dream Team, the newly constituted trial team that includes Marvin Stender, Tony Serra, and Erica Ettelson, Bill Goodman, legal director for the Center of the Constitutional Rights, also joins as consulting attorney. Stender is a highly respected litigator, judicial arbitrator, and mentor in the National Lawyers Guild. The rally will also launch a petition calling for Mayor Jerry Brown and the Oakland City Council to end the city's attempts to delay the case. The petition also asks the mayor to launch an investigation into the 1990 car bomb assassination attempt that nearly killed Earth First activists Judy Berry and Daryl Cherney, as well as into the misconduct by the Oakland Police Department in their original investigation of this still unsolved crime. The rally at noon will be followed, like I said, by a 1 p.m. march to the federal court building, where Judge Claudia Wilkin will put the case back on her docket after a recent Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling, which rejected the Oakland Police Department's claims of immunity from prosecution. Anyway, all that's happening Friday, December 10th. All right. Here's an announcement for this holiday season. Native American political prisoner Leonard Peltier has organized his usual annual gift drive for the people of the Lakota Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. If you have practical clothing or other kinds of new stuff that you'd like to give, to some very, very needy people. Gloves, jeans, t-shirts, socks, thermal underwear, sweatshirts, hats, scarves, jackets, boots, etc. Blankets, pillows, tools, children's toys. All sizes from infant to extra, extra large adult clothing is needed. And they request new clothing, practical stuff. These people live in pretty pretty tough conditions. So anyway, the clothing will be distributed to people who live on the Pine Ridge Reservation at Leonard Peltier's request. Here is the address to send the stuff to: Geraldine Janis, J-A-N-I-S, P.O. Box 525, Pine Ridge, South Dakota, 57770. Once again, that address is Geraldine Janis. She is a member of the Elders Council of the Leonard Peltier Defense Committee. Geraldine Janis, J-A-N-I-S, P.O. Box 525, Pine Ridge, South Dakota, and the zip 57770. If you need more information, contact the Leonard Peltier Defense Committee at 785-842-5774. That's 785-842-5774. And the draft U.S. Department of Agriculture Forest Service Strategic Plan, also known as the 2000 Revision, has been released to the public and Forest Service employees. You and your colleagues are invited to review the draft 2000 revision and send your ideas and suggestions about what you think needs to be changed or added. The strategic draft plan and capability for your online response is located at the following webpage: www.fs.fed.us/plan. Once again, that's www.fs.fed.us/plan. Or if you prefer, you can send your written comments to the attention of Catherine Maloney, M-A-L-O-N-E-Y, Director of Strategic Planning and Resource Assessment Staff, USDA Forest Service, P.O. Box 96090, Washington, D.C. 20090. Once again, that address, Catherine Maloney, Strategic Planning and Resource Assessment Staff, USDA Forest Service, P.O. Box 96090, Washington, D.C. 20090. And if you're not on the web, you can request a copy of the draft 2000 revision at the following phone number: 202-205-1235. That's 202-205-1235 for copies of the U.S. Forest Service Strategic Plan 2000 revision. All right, let's get into action news here. Activists calling themselves People of the Earth were arrested Saturday after unfurling a massive banner to protest the consumerism of the holiday season. The 2,750-square-foot banner, which read, "Don't buy into consumerism, spare the earth from overconsumption," was draped over the Panasonic billboard above the New Jersey approach to the Lincoln Tunnel leading to New York City. After the banner had been in place for several hours and seen by thousands of motorists, the group voluntarily removed it as a result of negotiations with police. "We're sending a message to holiday shoppers so that they take a moment to think about the repercussions of mindless consumerism," a climber, Tim Keating, said from atop a 120-foot-tall billboard via cellular phone. "Species extinction, pollution, displacement of indigenous people, sweatshops, and forced labor, animal cruelty, these are also the results of holiday gift purchases." The group says Americans consume many times the global consumption average. Though only 6% of the global human population, Americans are responsible for 30% of the use of materials, 35% of fossil fuel and nuclear energy consumption, and 35% of human-caused pollution. Paper consumption alone has doubled in the U.S. since 1950, while the population of the country has only increased by 20%, says Joan Roney, another billboard climber. Unfortunately, the activists were taken to the Weehawken police station, where they were charged with trespassing and criminal mischief. In animal news, the Australian government has condemned Japan's decision to continue its so-called scientific whaling program in the Southern Oceans. Environment Minister Robert Hill says Australia will step up its opposition to whaling in the lead-up to the International Whaling Commission meeting to be held in Adelaide next summer. Australia and Japan have cooperated for many years on a range of environmental programs, such as conservation of migratory shorebirds, but whale protection is one issue on which the two countries appear to hold different views, Senator Hill said. Japanese vessels are moving into the Southern Ocean to commence another whale kill despite strong international support for protection of whales in the Southern Ocean Sanctuary. Senator Hill said Australia would continue to urge Japan to abandon its annual take of 440 minke whales. The information sought from the so-called scientific whaling program can be obtained using non-lethal means, the senator said. The Australian government remains totally opposed to lethal scientific whaling, and we will continue to promote increased protection for whales ahead of the 52nd annual meeting of the International Whaling Commission to be held in Adelaide next year, Hill said. And the National Marine Fisheries Service has new rules for lobster fishing in northeastern waters. The regulations announced last Monday will integrate federal and state fishery management plans into a comprehensive effort to end overfishing and rebuild egg production in lobster resources. This action represents a major step toward the cooperative management of the East Coast's most valuable commercial fishery, the lobster fishery, by bringing it under the federal and state partnership authority of the Atlantic Coastal Fisheries Cooperative Management Act, said the National Marine Fisheries Service Director Penny Dalton. All federal lobstering permit holders will be affected. The plan continues all existing federal measures, including a trip limit for non-trap landings. Management authority for federal waters will be transferred from the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation and Management Act to the Atlantic Coastal Fisheries Cooperative Management Act. This increases the state's responsibility for lobster management while retaining National Marine Fisheries Service responsibility for federal permit holders and complementary measures for federal waters. National Marine Fisheries Service and lobster industry will work through the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission rather than a regional fishery management council to devise conservation measures. There are also trap limits in nearshore areas. Each operation is limited to 1,000 traps in fishing year 1999 and 800 traps in fishing year 2000. In offshore areas, operations are limited to 2,000 traps in 1999 and no more than 1,800 next year. Wisconsin conservation wardens and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service agents are turning to hunters and residents for help in finding the killer of a timber wolf on the Nekoda National Wildlife Refuge in Juneau County near Eau Claire, Wisconsin. The wolf was discovered on November 24th and taken to the National Wildlife Health Lab in Madison for examination and a necropsy. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Special Agent Ed Spoon said the examination shows the young female wolf was killed by gunshot. Wolves are classified as an endangered species in Wisconsin under the Federal Endangered Species Act and have threatened status under the Wisconsin Endangered Species Act. In October, the Wisconsin Natural Resources Board approved a plan for long-term management of the state's wolf population. The plan set a management goal of 350 wolves for that state. A $4,000 reward is being offered for the information leading to the arrest and conviction of the person or persons responsible for killing the wolf. The Defenders of Wildlife Imperiled Predator Reward Fund is donating $1,500 of that. The remainder is from the Timber Wolf Alliance at the Sigurd Olson Institute, Northland University, Ashland, Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. If you have any information about the killing of the wolf, you can call the Department of Natural Resources in Wisconsin. Their hotline is 1-800-TIP-WDNR, or... let's give you that number again, 1-800-TIP-WDNR or 608-221-1206. That's 608-221-1206 and ask for extension 15. After traveling some 400 miles from Durango, Colorado to Lisco, Nebraska, a reintroduced lynx was shot near a river bottom. The lynx is listed as endangered in Colorado, where killing one can bring a fine of up to $100,000 and a year in jail. After crossing an imaginary line into Nebraska, the lynx is simply considered a fur bearer, and shooting one only carries a fine of up to $575. In any case, no one has yet been arrested. After its release on May 13th, the radio-colored lynx was tracked as it crossed Interstate 70 and was first spotted near Rocky Mountain National Park then near the Rawhide Power Plant east of Fort Collins before heading northeast into Wyoming. As it continued east into Nebraska, it was reported by a farmer as a spotted cat with a radio collar that got into his chicken shed and killed a couple of chickens. It was last seen near Chimney Rock National Historic Site on November 6th by a group of Boy Scouts who took pictures of it. According to the news story, the animal appears to have been healthy and well-fed before it was shot. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife has concluded the state has no authority to regulate the hunting of gray whales along the state's coastlines. Last week, Governor Gary Locke asked the department to investigate and report back to him on whether the state has authority to intervene in the hunt of gray whales by the Macaw Indian tribe, after protesters claimed that whale hunters that claimed the whale that macaw hunters killed earlier this year was a resident gray whale. They maintain that because it was a member of a resident population, the whales deserve state protection as a natural resource. The Macaw tribe exercised its treaty hunting rights to harvest marine mammals under a permit issued by the U.S. government. This study investigated whether the state has a role in the Macaw tribe's hunt of gray whales, Locke said. The state has no jurisdiction in this issue, and we must respect the tribe's treaty rights to hunt gray whales, the investigation concluded. Management of gray whales and other marine mammals is under the authority of the Federal Department of Commerce, and the state has no authority to regulate gray whale populations. The North Pacific gray whale is a healthy population that is at or above recorded historic levels. Although some whales have been seen feeding along the Washington coast, there are no records to indicate these whales remain in Washington throughout the year. The management agreement between the National Marine Fisheries Service and the Macaw Tribe provides safeguards to protect local feeding groups of whales in the waters of Washington. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has designated 28 areas in California, Oregon, and Washington as critical habitat for the Pacific Coast population of the western snowy plover, a species listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act since 1993. Only about 2,000 of the small shorebirds remain alive. The habitat designation covers a total of 18,000 acres and 180 miles of coastline, or about 10% of the coastline of California, Oregon, and Washington. Of the 28 critical habitat areas, 19 are designated in California, 7 in Oregon, and only 2 in Washington. Critical habitat refers to areas essential to the conservation of the threatened or endangered species that may require special management. These areas do not have to be occupied by the species at the time of designation. As a threatened species, the western snowy plover is already protected by the Endangered Species Act, no matter where it is, said U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Manager Michael Speer. The designation of critical habitat has no effect on a private landowner engaged in private activities that do not involve a federal permit or funding. The designation comes in response to a federal court order stemming from a lawsuit filed by the Environmental Defense Center. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says it did not have enough data to designate critical habitat for the snowy plover when it listed the species as threatened. A decision was further delayed by a year-long congressional moratorium on listing endangered species and designating critical habitat. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is preparing a draft recovery plan for the western snowy plover, which it expects to release in the spring of the year 2000. And a Mexican gray wolf was found dead late last October, and that may have been killed by a mountain lion, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced Wednesday. An investigation by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Department of Law Enforcement has found no evidence of human-caused mortality in the recent death of the reintroduced wolf. A preliminary examination found puncture wounds that had been inflicted before the wolf died, similar in characteristic to bites from another animal, and in several areas of the carcass, including the neck and one leg. In addition, the wolf suffered broken vertebra in the neck. The actual cause of death is suspected bite wound from a cougar or mountain lion in the neck. The autopsy was performed at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service National Forensics Laboratory in Ashland. Final laboratory analysis results may not be obtained yet for several weeks. The wolf was an alpha female of a pack known as the Campbell Blue Pack. The body of the wolf was found lying about 100 yards off the Highway 191 in eastern Arizona's Apache National Forest. The Campbell Blue female was paired with a male in the pack following the death of his former mate, and the new pair was re-released into the Apache National Forest on December 11th of last year. The pair had established their territory in the stray horse area of that forest. Unfortunately, she's no longer around. And in enormous, and in climate news, enormous swaths of Arctic sea ice are vanishing each year, and humans are the likely culprits, a team of scientists announced last Thursday. Using ground-based and satellite data, the researchers estimate there is a 98% chance that the melt is due at least in part to global warming caused by human activities. For the first time, scientists used space-based observations of Arctic sea ice retreats into a much longer-term context and have examined the likelihood that the sea ice decreases are in part because of human-caused climate change. The results seem to support doomsayers' predictions that climate change is the reason for the melting of the Arctic ice. Most scientists agree that the warm climate occurs because of heat trapped by gases emitted by burning oil and gas. Sea ice is a sensitive indicator of climate change. If the global climate is warming, the amount of permanent sea ice in the Arctic should decrease. And that's what they found. Satellite measurements and surface observations have shown that the area of the Northern Hemisphere has sea ice. In fact, has been decreasing for almost 50 years. Two reports in today's issue of the journal Science, published by the American Association for the Advancement of Science, present new measurements and analyze those changes in the Arctic sea ice. And one team, led by Konstantin Vinnikov of the University of Maryland, used computer climate models to examine whether the decreases observed in the ice cover of the Arctic over the past few decades were the result of primarily natural climate changes, or might also be influenced by human-induced global warming, says study co-author Dr. Claire Parkinson, a National Air and Space Administration climatologist in the Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt. Their model suggests that the probability of this change being caused by the natural variability is less than 2% for the last 20 years. They predict the decreases will continue during the next century. Vinnikov and Parkinson conclude that the decrease in Northern Hemisphere sea ice is probably the result of human-driven global warming. Moving to news from Brazil, using ultraviolet technology, Greenpeace activists have identified an illegal supply of logs in the yard of Edil do Brasil, a Japanese export logging company, in the Iracoasi municipality of Pará State, Brazil. Officials from Brazil's environmental agency IBAMA, who were with the Greenpeace team when they identified the illegal wood, fined the company and confiscated the logs. The action was a result of the environmental group's investigation of Pará's timber industry, which started November 12th and has covered more than 4,000 kilometers. It is no longer just another story about timber without proof of origin. By using this simple technology, we have been able to prove beyond a doubt the illegality of the trademark of the Amazon logging industry, said Greenpeace campaigner Paulo Adario. Last Friday, IBAMA and Greenpeace, returning from a routine visit to a mill in Pará State, stopped a truck carrying 7 logs of favieira, a type of timber used in the plywood industry. The cargo was not accompanied by authorizations for forest product transport documents and was therefore illegal. In order to track the logs to their destination, IBAMA agents released the truck after Greenpeace activists marked the logs with a special dye which is sensitive to ultraviolet light. On Monday morning, the truck carrying the marked logs entered the gates of the Edil do Brasil. A few hours later, empty, the vehicle left. IBAMA and Greenpeace then attempted to enter the company property but were stopped by security guards. Only after intervention by federal police at the end of the afternoon were Greenpeace activists able to enter the Edil facility and, using ultraviolet lamps, located the marked logs. Under the environmental crimes law recently adopted by the Brazilian government, IBAMA was then fined Edil do Brasil $3,600 for being in possession of the logs. While awaiting the arrival of the federal police, IBAMA also apprehended and fined another logging truck delivering favieira timber to Edil with insufficient documentation. Edil is the largest exporter of processed plywood from the Amazon, controlling major plywood markets in the U.S., Japan, the United Kingdom, and the Netherlands. Oh boy. Moving to the U.S., the Wildlands Center for Preventing Roads, the Wilderness Society, American Lands Alliance, and more than 90 partner groups have announced their intention to file a rulemaking petition challenging the use challenging the Forest Service to utilize their existing authority to develop a comprehensive and uniform approach to ORV management on national forest land, says a press release from the groups. There are a few events in the course of history that have had the potential to more seriously impact wildlife and their habitat than the advent of off-road vehicles, said Gail Jocelyn of the Montana Wildlife Society. Unfortunately, the stewards of public lands have not been able to adequately respond to these damaging land uses. ORVs, which include jeeps, all-terrain vehicles, snowmobiles, and motorbikes, compact the soil, damage vegetation, displace wildlife, cause erosion, and generate an incredible number of user conflicts on our public lands. The result? We are losing wild country and wild places at a rapid pace. If you'd like more information, contact Bethany Walder of the Wildland Center for Preventing Roads, the number 406-543-9551. That's 406-543-9551. Or send email to wildlandscpr at wildrockies.org. That is Wildlands, capital C, capital P, capital R, at wildrockies.org. And the California Native Plant Society has petitioned the California Fish and Game Commission to list the Monterey pine as a threatened species. Threats to the species are fragmentation and clearing of land for development, disease, invasive species, and management emphasize fire suppression. Powerful opponents to the listing have mobilized, and the California Native Plant Society is calling upon all activists to submit letters of support. If you'd like more information, contact Mary Matthews. Her number, 408-659-2528. That's 408-659-2528. Or send mail to mmatthews at redshift.com. That's mmatthews at redshift.com. And an appeal brought by Lee Haney of Wild Law North Woods for Superior Wilderness Action Network has stopped the Ivins timber sale in the Chippewa National Forest. The regional forester in Milwaukee wrote, "I recommend that the district ranger's decision be reversed as to the adequacy of the cumulative effects disclosure, lack of site-specific information, and a lack of adequate documentation." That's good news in Minnesota. More information, contact Ray of Swan. His number, 651-646-6277. That's 651-646-6277. And the biggest threat to forests this session of Congress is now being negotiated in the Senate. The House of Representatives recently passed a county payments bill, H.R. 2389, supported by a coalition of the timber industry, county officials, and education interests that would make permanent the linkage between logging of the national forests and payments to the counties and schools. Key Senate offices began negotiations on the bill last week. Included in the talks are Senator Ron Wyden, Larry Craig, Trent Lott, Tom Daschle, Patty Murray, and Jeff Bingaman. Negotiators are using the House-passed bill H.R. 2389 and the similar Craig-Wyden bill, Senate Bill 1608, as a starting point for the talks. Senator Craig's staff has indicated they hope to complete work on the new bill by the end of December so the Senate can vote on the bill when they return in February. This doesn't give us much time to head off this dangerous legislation. Please contact your senator, the phone number 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121, and urge them to support the Forest Service proposal to de-link county payments. Support giving counties a choice whether to keep all the money or to divert a portion to land management projects. Oppose the creation of new off-budget funds which create incentives for the agency to generate revenues from logging, and oppose the creation of local advisory committees that favor local economic interests over broader public interests. And Earth First Radio will be right back.